Hey, folks. Today's program is sponsored by our favorite sponsor, Sunset Lake Sebade. And today, they have a sort of almost like a flash sale for the next 4 days leading up to one of the most sometimes can be difficult days ever. That, of course, is Valentine's Day. And to celebrate Valentine's Day, all Sunset Lake Sebade edibles will be 30% off using the coupon code SWEET, as in something sweet. You know how that works. Sale ends at the end of Valentine's Day. So if you don't have a gift yet, or even if you just want a gift yourself, because I don't know if this is going to come in time for Valentine's Day, but nevertheless, gift yourself or someone special the gift of relaxation, sleep, or good vibes. You can give them like a, you know, a picture from the web of this is coming for you. Today until February 14th, Valentine's Day, you can save 30% off on all Sunset Lake Sebade's edibles.
Fudge might be a romantic Valentine's Day gift.
Fudge. The gummies with a little bit of THC can also be somewhat romantic.
Yeah. Light some candles, relax.
They also have coffee that is embedded with Sebade, and which is a great weekend blend for me. Sort of balances out some of the caffeine. You still get your caffeine, but you also chill. And they've got just straight Sebade gummies. Just use the code SWEET at checkout, and you will enjoy yourself. I have to say, I now go between like the gummies with the melatonin and the regular gummies, and then the gummies with the THC. That's tends to be my sitting down watching, let's say, tonight movie night. Maybe
Born Supremacy. I'm
Born
so
Supremacy,
excited for him.
And a little bit of THC, just enough so that I can enjoy the movie and I don't start like wandering off in my head somewhere. But check them out. This sale ends on February 14th. And of course, Sunset Lake Sebade, a great company. They have great business practices, $20 minimum wage. They have mostly employee-owned company. They use integrated pest management. That means no pesticides on their Sebade. All of their Sebade products are third-party tested. Just a tremendous amount of integrity in their product. Great business and farming practices. And they're also a movement partner. They're always donating money to things like strike funds and immigrant resettlement and refugee resettlement and food pantries. Just a great all-around company. Check them out, sunsetlakesebade.com. Use the coupon code SWEET, all edibles, 30% off. All right, now for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 10th, 2023. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, proprietor of the Uber blog Hullabaloo, Digby, or Heather Parton, will be joining us. Also on the program today, proprietor of JudyGold.com. And she's got a new one-woman show, I think it is.
Whoa.
It's coming out. She's going to tell us about Judy Gold will be here. But first, the death toll reaches over 22,000 people in Turkey and Syria. In the wake of this earthquake, the numbers are expected to rise. They are still involved in rescue operations. In this country, the special counsel investigating Donald Trump's both the Mar-a-Lago and the January 6th planning has subpoenaed former Vice President Mike Pence. Oh, Mike. The Florida High School Sports Board, this is a statewide committee. Congratulations to them. They have removed the menstruation questioning provision to suss out who's eligible to play what sports in Florida. They are working hard at finding other ways of targeting trans kids. The FEC orders Santos, George Santos, to formally declare if he's going to run in 2024 because he's been raising money for it.
Huh. That seems so unlike him.
It's so unlike him. Turns out he was also charged in 2017 for a Amish puppy theft.
Just.
But to be fair, they dropped the charges after he claimed that someone stole his checkbook and just happened to pay for those puppies.
He's a Disney villain, this guy.
Mad Libs.
Speaking of Disney villain, U.S. is investigating Elon Musk, his Neuralink company, for transiting of deadly pathogens. It's part of their plan to, you know, experiment on monkeys.
Pronouns are disease spreader.
Exactly. And it could also be engineer firer. New report that he fired an engineer who worked at Twitter because Elon felt his tweets weren't getting enough attention. Lula in D.C. today met with Bernie Sanders and then is meeting with Joe Biden any moment now.
All right. I thought you can say Danny Bessner.
I don't know who. I didn't. Yeah, maybe. Ron DeSantis fun. On the hot seat for his past calls for Social Security and Medicare privatization. The Mississippi House is attempting to pass a law that will create a separate judicial system just for the city of Jackson.
Yeah, with no input from Jackson residents, just Republican white officials.
Exactly. McConnell criticizes Republican Senator Rick Scott for his plan to sunset Social Security, even though we've been told that such a plan does not exist. Lastly, Barbara Lee to announce a Senate California run this month, according to reports. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for joining us. It is Casual Friday. Thus, Emma, my co-host, wearing really sort of what you wear every day.
Yeah, basically. Like top and jeans.
Yep.
That's kind of it.
Not me.
Sneakers.
Not me. I'm dressing down because it's Friday.
Oh, yeah.
I know that joke is, it's not really a joke. It's really just tradition now.
It's just a way for you probably to segment your week and your wardrobe, right? At this point, it's just...
It cuts down on his like cognitive overload.
Yeah, right. So...
That's exactly... That's it. First off, it's embarrassing that you guys nailed it so succinctly. That's a little bit embarrassing. But it also, to be fair, I have 3 or 4 shirts.
Yeah.
Okay? And I rotate them very carefully. I try not to, you know, do them in a row. And the fact is, like, I don't have time to do laundry till the weekend. And so Friday allows me to put out, you know, my 5th and 6th and 7th mm-hmm. shirts. I have like
7. I mean, we're going crazy.
I think people have seen like a wide array of my casual Friday shirts. I got this one. I got the other blue one with the
collarless one these days.
And then I've been wearing long sleeve. I've got like 2 or 3 different one of those. I mean,
eventually you're going to be wearing like a hoodie into the office, like a total
Michael
hood,
was
hoodlum.
Doing that for a while until he upgraded to his all Adidas tracksuit.
Oh yeah.
Yep. So that could be my trajectory.
Can I just say quickly about this Elon Musk Neuralink thing? Doesn't this sound like the intro to some sort of zombie movie? Brains contaminated from experiments on monkeys, maybe creating a disease.
Well, as long as it's not the government doing it, I feel safe.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a guy who's doing it for profit. I mean, look, what could go wrong? I mean, he's been so successful with not having, you know, cars blow up on the highway.
Yeah.
He criticized
right.
Fauci. I think you can trust him.
Here's the thing. Every time there is a story like this about one of his companies that comes out, my Twitter feed gets filled up with all of these reports about what some other one of his companies are doing. Like, so I got all this like SpaceX stuff from accounts I don't follow. I mean, look, you're a billionaire, you buy the thing. Why wouldn't you just use it as your personal marketing tool? But it gets a little bit annoying as a user.
Yeah.
Custodial Artist says, Sam and Emma, you should both wear your own merchandise on Fridays. Left is best. Maybe we should have one day to do that.
Okay,
but
yeah.
I just can't. I can't do that.
Never worn a shirt with my name on. I've never worn one of those Emma Jordy shirts. I've given them to people.
I've worn a lot of shirts with just like with my own image on it, but that's a casual. Yeah. That's not a merchandise thing. I just do the photos all over me.
I wore the Left Reckoning tank with a This Is Revolution last night's stream. So
wow. All right. Well, Matt's way out ahead of us. Let's get into this. On, I think it was Tuesday. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday? We got a phone call. Were you here for this, for the call that we got from Ohio?
No.
Then it must have been on Wednesday. We got a phone call from someone who had to evacuate because of this East Palestine, Ohio train wreckage. And I believe we've clipped it and posted it. And if you have the opportunity to go listen to it, it's worth listening to because these folks didn't know what was going on for 24 hours, really. And this stuff burning is highly toxic, and it apparently also gathers in the basements of people's homes. And
yeah, that was the striking detail from that caller, is saying they were checking people's basements for that stuff to see if it was safe to go down there.
Because right. It seeps into the soil?
It literally just goes into the homes, and because it's a heavy gas, it just sort of hangs out in the basement, and it's highly toxic. So people can't go home, and they're not getting many questions answered. Apparently it took like I said, almost 24 hours for the train company to know how many cars were full of this stuff and exactly what it was. Now, whether they knew it or not, or didn't just tell people or not, in some ways, both scenarios are equally as bad. These companies are understaffed. We know that. There was a story. There's multiple stories out there now where, you know, when we've talked about this in the context of the near strike that was going to take place with these workers on these carriers, they want more staffing. They were going to go on strike, not just about pay. It was staffing. At the end of the day, it was staffing. The way that it was presented was we need sick leaves. We need not just paid sick leaves. We need sick days that we don't get punished for and possibly fired for. That was basically it. And the subtext of that is they got to hire more people.
Yeah.
They want to make this they want to run these trains with fewer and fewer people.
And longer and longer trains with
as part of the process.
Yes, right.
So you're increasing the danger for people.
Efficiency.
Efficiency and profits. And they ended up buying back a lot of their stock. I mean, you know all the story on this. And the other thing that they have to do is minimize when these things happen. They have to make sure they don't become public stories. They don't have to become big. Look at what, during the course of Mike DeWine's press conference, The cops there essentially tackled and arrested this guy, News Nation, a news outlet, Evan Lambert. He was covering the press conference by DeWine, and they were telling him not to videotape it, which, of course, is his job. And somebody was coming over, some security was coming over, and apparently, like, trying to grab his camera, and they got into an argument about it because the guy's like, I'm a reporter. I don't know what you're doing, buddy. And then the cops came and arrested the reporter. Here's some clip of that from News Nation.
Reporter with News Nation, it's all being reported right now.
This is horrible.
Because you can't talk to people about doing their jobs.
Oh my God, I cannot believe this. This is horrible.
This is what it's like to be a reporter.
Evan, I'm so sorry. Evan, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Sina.
Roll over, sir.
Can you please loosen this? Because it hurts.
Yeah, that one's a little tight. So we are.
Oh, my God.
Thank you very much.
This is horrible.
Can someone help me?
Yeah, we're helping. Evan, I'm sorry. Oh,
are you serious?
This is horrible.
Doing a live shot gets you arrested.
What happened?
I got arrested because I was trying to do a live report about what people need to know.
And he's been here all week.
I've been here all week.
You can't do this to him. This is wrong.
Really?
Why are you arresting him?
Thank you, Tia. This is an overreaction if I've ever seen one. You really want to go for
this? This is horrible.
You're on the national news just because I'm trying to do my job?
Why was he arrested?
This is his First Amendment right.
About doing the First Amendment.
You guys are distracting from what the governor needs to tell the
people. It is literally my job to be there.
Why are you arresting Evan?
Watch your wall, watch your wall.
Why are you arresting Evan? He's a national correspondent with News Nation. He's been here on the ground all week covering the story. What is the problem?
All right. Well, that's basically it. I mean, and I, who knows like what the theory is behind this? But they've decided to, he's obviously been released by now. This happened on Wednesday afternoon.
He was released late Wednesday evening. So,
part of it, I think, is a function of trying to intimidate the press so that they don't get, they don't nose around too much. And part of it is also probably some measure of distraction. Let's get another story out there about this and not bring attention to it. Although that I suggest has been backfired a little bit. But I mean, this is a bigger story, and the caller we had the other day is just like he said, he's waiting for the lawsuits, and we'll talk more about that actually, because there's another story I think about these lawsuits, and folks know that I go to that tort conference every year, but this is
what actual free speech. Suppression looks like
cops and corporations in control of the information.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. I was just scrolling through Glenn Greenwald's Twitter feed trying to see, because he mentions the word censor many times within the context of this BS panel that the Republicans are putting out, this fake church commission looking into big tech collusion against Republicans. No, this is actually a threat to freedom of the press and free speech.
Yeah, but also AOC had a weird cadence the other day on the floor of the House.
I forgot about that.
And you're sort of overlooking that. We're going to get to we're going to be talking about that committee with Heather Parton Digby and also the State of the Union in just a moment. First, a couple words from our sponsors today. As you know, my daughter has what she considers a business, which involves taking the clothes that I have given her and selling them. And we are in high-level negotiations. Also, it runs through my PayPal. And I have recently come to understand that I get charged more than she doesn't realize it, but she's paying for all this like enormous amount for postage that she just apparently thinks is free. And so we are in high level business negotiations right now where I'm trying to get her to switch to stamps.com because stamps.com is, well, it's a big advantage for bigger companies, but also small businesses. Stamps.com lets you print your own postage and shipping labels right from your home or your office or your teenager's room, as it were. Stamps.com has postage rates you can't find anywhere else. 84% off a U.S. Postal Service and UPS. For 25 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. And if you sell products online, Stamps.com seamlessly connects with every major marketplace and shopping cart. So she can do this and save me money. Stamps.com to print postage wherever you do business. All you need, again, is a computer and a printer. They even send you a free scale. and set your business up for success when you get started with Stamps.com today. Sign up with promo code MajorityReport for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, enter the code MajorityReport. That's Majority Report is the coupon code. Go to stamps.com today. I like that. No long-term commitments or contracts because, you know, you don't know how long the Depop business is going to stay up.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, with the Fed these days.
Yeah. What? No, that's not impact. It's that she should like decide like she wants to do something different instead of selling her clothes. The clothes I get her.
Yeah. I mean, it's a for-profit model. It sounds successful for her.
Yeah. Meanwhile, plastic. We have a problem with plastic. 100 billion plastic bags are used and then thrown away every year. That plastic bag you see in the gutter or floating in a stream or washed up on the beach, multiply that by 100 billion. Right? Problem. Huge problem. I've said this before. 40% of all plastic, I think that is in circulation today, been produced in the past 18 years. New York City has outlawed little plastic bags. So you're starting to see less and less of those. Mm. But still, in your home, you're using a ton of plastic bags. Hold On is a company born from the idea that there must be a better way to go about our daily chores. Trash bags, kitchen bags, we obviously need those. But do they need to be 100% plastic? Well, the answer is 100% new. Hold On trash and kitchen bags are heavy-duty, plant-based, non-toxic, and 100% home compostable, which means that they break down in weeks, not decades. They don't fill up our landfills, and they do not pollute our oceans. Zip-seal kitchen bags they have, they come in sandwich and in bigger, like, you know, I don't know, toys and junk to fit all your needs from holding carrots or crayons or whatever it is. Saul gets his sandwiches in those plastic bags and is always like little tchotchkes and stuff he's playing with and pulling apart and breaking. I just put it in a bag and that way that's the way I deal with it. Anyways, Hold On wants to be part of a growing movement away from single-use plastic. If you ask most experts, a single-use plastic is the worst kind of plastic at every stage. Production, disposal, decomposition, plastic bags are harming our planet. These are made from non-toxic ingredients and plant-based renewables. Hold On trash and kitchen bags meet the highest standards of compostability and break down, again, in weeks, not in millennium. For me, again, my kids, when I use all the Ziplocs around the house, I've switched over to that. And I don't feel so bad when I'm removing the tremendous amount of cat poop that two of my cats generate. Now I like, you know, I bag it all very quickly. I don't mess around because I don't feel bad about all those bags. That's the God's honest truth. House is marginally less smelly. Shop plant-based bags and replace single-use plastics all over your home. Visit holdonbags.com/majority or enter the code MAJORITY at checkout. Save 20% off your order. Sustainability has never been more simple. That's Hold On, HOLDON, holdonbags.com/majority, or enter majority, receive 20% off your order. Small things can lead to lasting change if we stop and say, Hold On. Appreciate Hold On sponsorship. Appreciate the ability to get rid of that cat poop. Put a link in the YouTube and podcast description.
Bags without the baggage.
Oh, yeah. You should pitch that.
You
should pitch that to them. Lastly, as you know, I take my online security very, very seriously. And my go-to all-in-one app for that, Aura. They're also sponsoring today's program. Like I say, it's an easy-to-use app that includes everything you need to stay safe online. Aura protects you from scammers and hackers. What it does is it scans the dark web, essentially, you know, those places where scammers and hackers who have stolen information, they trade it or sell it. It looks for your emails. It looks for your passwords. It looks for your social security numbers, and it alerts you fast if it finds anything. on day one, when you plug your email into Aura, it will kick back to you and say where it's been compromised. And you will be shocked as to how many places it's been compromised and or like that you had signed up for these things. I had forgotten about half these things. They also send automatic takedown notices to those websites that post all of your public info. That way you get less robocalls. That way you maintain operational security. Aura gives you near real-time alerts if there's any suspicious credit inquiries. So if someone was trying to open a loan in your name or a credit card in your name, I got one of those when I opened up a bank account for Myla, which was not suspicious, although definitely dubious thing for me to do. But no, it was good to know that I was going to get contacted. Obviously, it wasn't a problem for me. But they also got a VPN that allows you to stay anonymous online, keeps your browsing history and personal information safe and encrypted. They also protect your devices from viruses and malware, spyware. Super important, particularly, this is a good thing to get for your parents too, incidentally. But in terms of your kids, you can also control what they do with their devices. You can restrict their time, their apps. You can make sure they're doing focus time instead of watching YouTube and doing their homework. They have a password manager that lets you store and access your online passwords securely and conveniently. And the bottom line is you don't need 7 different apps to do all these things. You can do it all in one. That is Aura. Let Aura do the hard work of keeping you safe online. If you sign up for Aura right now, they will give you 2 weeks free. Like I say, when you put your email in there, you're going to be shocked to see how much information Aura finds exposed over those 2 weeks. Go to aura.com/majority, aura.com/majority. Start your free trial. It will be linked in the podcast and YouTube description. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton, or you may know her as Digby. We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to bring to introduce someone who has been on the program many, many, many times. Is considered one of the left's most esteemed commentators.
On her Wikipedia right there at the top.
So much so that someone actually did this. I feel like we need a remix of this to make it a little more hard hitting.
No, it's like warm and inviting.
Yeah. It's casual Friday.
It's casual Friday. Heather Parton, Digby, always a pleasure. thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
All three of the topics I wanted to hit, basically summarized in your last three pieces in Salon. Let's start with the weaponization, because we're going to get to the State of the Union, and it dovetails nicely into what's happening with Trump and DeSantis. But let's start with the, and you know, for a while people were calling this the new church committee, and it really got my goat, because I was like, you can't possibly believe that this is going to be a church, you know, like a church committee. The church committee brought about genuine reform, you know, and a lot of it's been rolled back, frankly, but of the FBI and the CIA and sort of like rules for the national security state. And this thing is really just a wine fest. But here, this is, I couldn't sum it up better than to play this clip of what's his name? Waters? What?
Jesse Waters.
Jesse Waters on the Five. And I can't remember the name of the woman who is there, who's the sort of
token Democrat.
DJ. The Democrat, TJ.
The DJ, right?
DJ.
Or VJ.
No. She's someone else.
Is she Kennedy? No.
No. And she actually like has a good point about this, but you bring this up in your weaponization piece. But here it is. This is what this entire committee is about.
But us. Okay, then DeSantis gets elected. Trump gets elected. What's he going to go in there and fire Chris Wray? Last time anybody did that, he got impeached for it. He got a special counsel down his throat. Or you go in and you leave Chris Wray in there, and then he blackmails you. So we have an FBI dictatorship here. You either fire him and die, or if you can't, or you can't touch him and you still die. And then the media comes out, doesn't even cover any of the substance of
the
hearing. Thank you. So this thing's totally contained over here, and no one discusses it. I'm sick of these hearings. Make me feel better, guys. Tell me this is going somewhere. Can I throw some in prison? Can someone go to jail? Can someone get fined?
If we had an objective Department of Justice,
we don't have
a tier two.
They're under investigation.
Department of Justice.
We don't have an objective anything anymore.
Just very quickly, you guys got the Durham investigation, which was supposed to blow the lid off of all of this, and it ended up with nothing.
There is nothing. Stop.
No, not because the jury was in D.C.
You guys admitted you planted the dossier.
Yeah, what?
You admitted you framed him as a traitor, and then you want to investigate. Our investigation. We're investigating the investigators. We're investigating the investigators.
We don't live in the same world. It's just crazy.
Exactly. Your world's fake.
My world is winning.
We're following the facts.
Oh, you're winning.
Because you guys are corrupt.
We are winning.
You robbed my vote.
This is the best.
You voted in New York.
What are you talking about?
What?
Go to break. Judge, tell him to go to break.
All right. Coming up.
So I guess what I think this captures here is the lunacy that's involved here, the complete failure to acknowledge that there was a investigation significantly longer than the Mueller investigation, maybe twice the length of the Mueller investigation, into all of the sort of supposed sort of, dark arts that were practiced on Donald Trump. It didn't go anywhere. They didn't discuss it. Fox is not even carrying these hearings because they know it's an embarrassment and it's not going to work out well for them. And by the end, Waters just realizes, like, this is all a joke. It doesn't matter. Chris Wray was appointed by Donald Trump. I mean, it's all just a joke. And cut to commercial before, you know, we just start laughing about how ridiculous this is. I mean, that to me sums it up better than any, you know, as well as it can be summed up.
Absolutely. I hadn't seen that. So this was new to me. That was amazing because you're absolutely right. Every single thing about that, the contradictions, the insane hypocrisy, the bizarro world, you know, recitation of non-facts. I mean, all wrapped up in this intense frustration. And at the same time, you see Greg Gutfeld over there on the side, laughing himself silly over the whole thing, right? I mean, he thinks it's really hilarious. It's a big joke. I mean, I have to wonder how the audience, the Fox News audience, takes that sort of thing. I mean, how is that received? Because I find it confusing at best. So, you know, I don't really know what they're doing. I mean, you know, it's, that's an unusual thing, but it does capture exactly what's going on. I mean, what we have seen in this new Congress, which is still brand new, just starting up, has been a chaotic shit show beyond anything I could have predicted. And I was predicting, I think we all were, a chaotic shit show. But here we are watching this every single, I mean, for everything from the speakership battle that we all watched live on television, that was absolute embarrassment. These hearings now are starting. You've got George Santos and that whole saga, the State of the Union and the bizarre behavior there, which we can talk about. I mean, this has been amazing. Now, granted, it's a show, but from what I'm seeing there with Waters and that crowd around there, they don't know quite how to sell it, right? I mean, they don't know what to do with this because it really is even beyond anything that they have can grasp. It's way, way out there.
Yeah, it is. And I don't, you know, who knows how the Fox audience responds to it, but
yeah,
I don't think it really, the Fox audience isn't as important in my mind about this. The real, like when we've seen this in the past, and I mean, we like literally you and I, we have like watched this in the past, whether it was like the Benghazi era or whether it was sort of like, you know, the Bush years. There has been a focus. It's all been insane. It's all been insane and sort of backed up by, you know, conspiracy theories, you know, like Hillary Clinton, you know, dragged Vince Foster's body into the park, that type of thing. Or Benghazi, you know, they had to have 50 hearings about this. There's always been the insane part. But what the committees are there for is to sort of like whitewash the insane part, soften the edges there, sell it to the mainstream, and have it become this ongoing saga that the rest of normal people have to deal with. And that may yet happen. I mean, there's a desperate inclination by the media to do that, but they are so all over the place that there's no cohesiveness. We've not seen this failure of leadership from the top in the Republican Party. There's no rudder here. And so it's like everything's zigzagging. Nothing can hold. I mean, when we get into the State of the Union, the same thing is going to be taking place. But there's no cohesive push here.
Absolutely not. I mean, everyone's a free agent doing exactly what they want. And they're all just kind of throwing. I mean, there's always been an aspect of right wing scandal mongering, which is essentially what the weaponization, you know, the obstruction of justice committee is doing. That they're just throwing things at the wall, hoping that something sticks, right? I mean, and they've always done this. They did it back in the 90s. This is just how they operate. But this time, it's like, I think that what's happened in the past, the point of that was to do what you just suggested, to get average people, normie Americans who don't, you know, aren't really invested that much in politics. And basically that they just kind of go, all right, enough. There's smoke, there's fire. There's something going on here. I don't like it. I don't want to hear about it anymore. They called it Clinton fatigue back in the 90s, you know, just kind of, yeah, I get it. These people are a bunch of jerks and they're going after the Clintons. But on the other hand, come on, let's just put it into it. We'll get somebody new in there. That's essentially, I think, what they want to do. And the Hunter Biden thing really plays into that well, which is just, we don't want to hear any more about Hunter Biden, so let's get rid of Biden. But the problem is that they've been doing this so much now that I think even normal Americans are onto it. They get it now. They look at them, they see this crazy behavior on the part of the right wing, and that's their shtick now. It's now they're kind of like, oh, get rid of these people rather than look at Joe Biden or the Democrats and say, well, there must be something to it, because they have no credibility. The right has completely lost all credibility, I think, with anyone but their own followers. There's no,
and their own followers are okay with them trolling, right? They're fine with the trolling. They actually thrive off that. But yeah, I mean, this might sound kind of facile, but how much of this just has to do also with the fact, well, one, Kevin McCarthy's incompetent, but two, that Biden's a boring white guy. Like, they don't have female boogeyman Hillary Clinton. Also, and they built up decades of, like, a narrative about the Clintons. Partially, partially it was given to them, but partially, mostly made up. And then Obama being a black guy. Like, Biden's approval ratings aren't out of this world, but he's so bland and standard that it's almost a shield against the crazy. Like, it just doesn't stick to him.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it's a really big thing. The thing they're trying to stick him with is the age thing, but they have to be careful because most of their voters are, ancient, Yeah. Other than that, the white guy thing is just, there's just nothing there for them to really grasp onto to really, drill home the hate.
It's also,
he's not even a hippie. I mean, yeah, not even a hippie. Right?
It's also super hard to say, like, aren't you sick of hearing for Hunter Biden? And now, so you'll have Donald Trump. I mean, it's literally saying, like, aren't you sick of the frying pan? Because the fire looks so inviting. And the other thing that cuts against this, and again, it's really just like how much does certain mainstream outlets, how much do they have to, like, kid themselves to broadcast this stuff as if it's real? And how much effort is associated with them having to sort of pretend this is actually genuinely real? And I think part of what also inhibits that is that on this same committee, you've got, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and and you've got all these sort of like lunatics out there. AOC is also on this committee. Cori Bush, I think, is on this committee, too. And they're out there. I think we played some footage of Cori Bush. This is AOC, and I think this is from yesterday or the day before. And this type of stuff, like, they're trying to bring in, like, Twitter executives, and they're trying to make it about, like, this whole conspiracy to hide the Hunter Biden story. Listen to the way that she starts this off. She starts it off first with the Hunter Biden, right? I think it is.
This is in the context of the Hunter Biden.
Yeah, okay. Listen to this.
Into it. Miss Navarroli, let's talk about something real. I'd like to show you a tweet posted by former President Trump about my colleagues and I on July 14th.
Oh, wait a second. There was another clip in there I sent in there that is where she starts off. She mentions the Washington Post. And it is, hold on, let me see if I can find it now. We got to find that one because that is the one that is, bear with me. She basically puts to lie the whole aspect of, here it is. It's that Instagram clip. It's right here. Hold on, bear with us. She starts off by basically, she's going to address other things about Twitter, but she starts off by talking about the Hunter Biden story. This is about the suppression that went on. People forget this aspect of the story, that the computer went to the New York Post, and the New York Post had the computer and they had the records. And they wouldn't share it with anybody so that nobody could do their own reporting on it. They were just supposed to retell the Post story. Mm. And the Post story was just sort of like really vague. Here we go. This is really important here.
Warning about Hunter Biden laptop disinformation, the guy who leaked it. Here's the deal. Before I even get into my questions, I think that the story here with the New York, with the Washington Post reporting is that what they're saying right here, when the New York Post first reported in October 2020 that it had obtained contents of a laptop computer allegedly owned by Joe Biden's son Hunter, there was an immediate roadblock faced by other news outlets that hoped to corroborate reporting, as many did. The newspaper wasn't sharing what it obtained. New York Post had this alleged information and was trying to publish it without any corroboration, without any backup information. They were trying to publish it to Twitter. Twitter did not let them, and now they were upset. I believe that political operatives who sought to inject explosive disinformation with the Washington Post couldn't get away with it. And Now they're livid. And they want the ability to do it again. They want the ability to inject this again. So they've dragged a social media platform here in Congress. They're weaponizing the use of this committee so that they can do it again. A whole hearing about a 24-hour hiccup in a right-wing political operation. That is why we are here right now. And it is, it's just an abuse of public resources, an abuse of public time. We could be talking about healthcare. We could be talking about bringing down the cost of prescription drugs. We could be talking about abortion rights, civil rights, voting rights. But instead, we're talking about Hunter Biden's half-fake laptop story. I mean, this is an embarrassment, but I'll go into it. Ms. Navarroli, let's talk about something real. I'd like to show you a tweet posted by former President Trump about my colleagues and I on July 14, 2019. It says in part, quote, "Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? Then come back and show us how it's done. These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy as quickly to work out free travel arrangements." A day or two after that, Donald Trump publicly incited, you know, violence at a rally, targeting four congresswomen, including myself, saying, "Go back to where you came from." And Ms. Navarroli, as I understand it, you were the most senior member of Twitter's content moderation team, or a senior member of Twitter's content moderation team when this was posted. As part of your responsibilities, did you review this tweet?
Yes, it was my team's responsibility to review these tweets.
And what did you conclude?
My team, Ray, made the recommendation that for the first time we find Donald Trump in violation of Twitter's policies and use the public interest interstitial.
For the first time?
Yes.
And at the time, Twitter's policy included a specific example when it came to banned abuse against immigrants, as they specifically included the phrase, "go back to your country" or "go back to where you came from," correct?
Yes, that was specifically included in the content moderation guidance as
and
an example.
You brought this up to the Vice President of Trust and Safety, Del Harvey, correct?
I did, yes.
And she overrode your assessment, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
And something interesting happened after she overrode your assessment. A day or two later, Twitter seemed to have changed their policies, didn't they?
Yes, that trope, "go back to where you came from," was removed from the content moderation guidance as an example.
So Twitter changed their own policy after the president violated it in order to potentially accommodate his tweet?
Yes.
Thank you. So much for bias against right wing on Twitter. Additionally, Ms. Navarroli, are you familiar with the account Libs of TikTok?
I have heard of it from the news, yes.
Mr. Roth, are you familiar with this account?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Are you aware from August 11th to August 16th, that account posted false information about Boston Children's Hospital, claiming that they were providing hysterectomies to children?
Yes, I am aware of that and other claims from the account.
And are you aware that this lie was then circulated by other prominent far-right influencers?
Yes.
And are you aware that all these claims, which I have reiterated, were false, culminated in a real-life harassment and ultimately a bomb threat to the Boston Children's Hospital?
Yes, I am aware.
And this account is still on that platform today, isn't it?
Regrettably, yes, it is.
Despite inspiring a bomb threat due to the right-wing incitement of violence against trans Americans in this country, because they cannot let go of this obsession with fixating violence and inciting violence against trans and LGBT people, in addition to immigrants, in addition to women of color.
All right. Well, you get the point. And we should also note that Libs of TikTok was, you know, had special, there was a special threshold that they had.
Yeah.
So in this one segment, she, one, destroys the narrative that the Hunter Biden story was being suppressed for no reason whatsoever. And we should mention at the end, like, I still don't know what is, no one who has ever complained about the suppression of the Hunter Biden story has ever said what the story is outside of the dick pics that Matt Taibbi was able to release as part of the Twitter files. Or at least he didn't actually release, they were just the URLs. So we didn't actually have to, he in some way also suppressed the dick pics, because he didn't show those. He just had, URLs to them. She demolishes that and then goes on to show that, in fact, they changed the rules for Donald Trump after the fact. They had a higher threshold for libs of TikTok. And now there's Rolling Stone reporting that comes out and says that, like, all of the supposed dark arts of, like, will you take down this post and take down that post was happening with both parties, except for the ones that were happening from the Republicans were coming from elected Republican officials in the government controlled by Donald Trump at that time.
It's an amazing, amazing story. And for, can I just say, just as an aside, how great AOC is. She is just really, really an exceptional representative. And it just, you know, I'm always just in awe of when I watch her in action. She's great. Whether she's talking to the press or in a situation like that.
It's amazing really how, like, she, I mean, there's one or two others, you know, there's maybe like another handful, I would say half a dozen congresspeople who can do a hearing.
Katie Porter.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, maybe and some people with some, you know,
I think Ilhan was great on the foreign services.
But yep. Like, why is it only like six people out of 220 that can do this? Is it just like, is it just like the intelligence of the congressperson? Or is it like they know how to pick a staff? Or like, what is it?
Well, I think with AOC and some and the ones you mentioned, I think it's this is just a natural talent. This is just somebody with the brains and the you know, the erudition to be able to take those situations and run with them. And they obviously have good staffs too. I mean, I don't know. All I know is that she's terrific. And that whole presentation of hers, it was super important for all the reasons that you set forth in the beginning, which, number one, the Hunter Biden story. The one thing that she said that is just so important for people to realize was when she said it was a 24-hour hiccup. This story that was suppressed and which changed the course of the election, according to the right wing. Seriously, they believe that this, if only this had been allowed to be disseminated properly, no one would have voted for Joe Biden, which is completely absurd. But, you know, whatever. This is their latest belief that if it was only 24 hours that Twitter suppressed the story. That just 24 hours. It was nothing. It was a blip in the middle of the campaign. I didn't even notice it at the time until long after when it became a big deal. So, I mean, first of all, that's a huge part of the thing. And then the rest of it that she outlined there, this idea that Trump got the special treatment, and we found out that he did. I mean, there was the story that came out in that same hearing about Chrissy Teigen, the you know, actress, celebrity, you know, whatever,
model
who you know, sent out a profane tweet about Donald Trump. I mean, haven't we all done it? And you know, I mean, sometimes you just can't help it. And somehow the White House basically called up Twitter and asked them to remove it because, you know, I guess it hurt his feelings or something, and they did it. I mean, this is what was actually going on. It's like you said, Sam, it's revealed that they had a special, you know, they had a point at which this woman who was testifying there was no longer allowed to handle the Donald Trump account. It was beyond her scope. And she was running this whole operation in there of you know, the terms of service and all that. They actually took that out of her hands. And Donald Trump was given special dispensation every step of the way. Now, you know, I'm not sure that you shouldn't have, you know, he was the president and, you know, you don't want to suppress political views. I mean, that would be wrong. So there is it's not, you know, just simple. But I mean, we know what this guy was doing. He was literally, as AOC said, inciting violence. And he did it all the time. It wasn't just on January 6th.
Right.
That's why that whole thing about how he wasn't inciting violence. I mean, when wasn't he inciting violence? I mean, the guy was doing it constantly from the time he went down the golden escalator and announced his candidacy. So this was an ongoing problem. And that hearing, it was so interesting because at the end of the hearing, there was one thing that came out about it that we had not known before. And that is that Donald Trump was the one
Yep.
Who got all the special treatment and who was demanding that things be taken down. And he and all of his accomplices in the Republican Party were pushing hard to do that. And it was the exact opposite. And you know, as happens so often, the Republicans were projecting onto the Democrats all the things that they were doing. And it came out in that hearing. Now, if you watch that Jesse Waters thing, you know, on the 5 on Fox News, you don't know that, and they're not right. Covering this. So any expectation that the right wing is going to be clued in about this is wrong, because they won't. They won't know about it. But
I agree. I agree totally. But I also think the thing that it's nice about that Waters clip was that we played is that there's an acknowledgement we live in two different worlds. And Fortunately for us at this time, the world that we live in has like 1 to 2 to 3 or 4 or 5% more voters. And, you know, I mean, that's just the reality. And, you know, and this dovetails with the State of the Union address and the sort of the response that we saw from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which is like, they're done. They are happy that they live in a separate world because they now have their own ecosystem.
Yeah.
And everybody's making a buck, and they almost can't tell that their stuff is not being broadcast in the sort of the rest of the universe. And so the compulsion to get it in there, the thing that Drudge used to do, laundering this stuff into it, that is gone. That no one seems to be, there's no money, as it were. There's no fame. There's no celebrity. There's no incentive structure anymore on the right to be that conduit that Drudge was. And so it's rattling around in there, and you get Sarah Huckabee Sanders come up and give her response to the State of the Union, dropping stuff like Joe Biden, even though he's really old and completely ineffectual, is actually the point of the spear of this woke, you know, radical left mob that is doing something. Really, it's nebulous. We can't quite tell what it is exactly because we can't describe it in any way. And it's basically involves CRT, these three magic letters that most people are like, wait, what?
Yeah.
CR what? And we woke mob, like what? Like what? And they're satisfied with it. And you know, again, could work. They figured out how to maintain minoritarian rule, but that's the world that they're in now. And it is, I just find it just utterly fascinating. Like even like the Twitter file stuff, like they're convinced this is the biggest, and every single person, some of whom, you know, I used to consider a pretty decent reporter, every single person involved in that fiasco should be completely embarrassed. And what it has also done, even though they were talking about like, can you believe the Twitter files are not being covered on mainstream news? They have now validated every single one of those editors, producers, whatever decision not to carry this, because it turned out to be completely what everybody said it was, a story of a social media company trying to deal with this new reality. I think certainly there's criticism that is available to them, but they were doing it equally. They were completely equally befuddled by whomever. There was no like political agenda associated with it. And they leaked half the story, essentially. Right. And everybody knew like, this seems incomplete. And all those reporters should have known it too. We don't know
that they didn't know it. I mean, I hate to cast aspersions here, but when this, after the hearing, Matt, you know, and everybody was talking about the Chrissy Teigen thing, and what she said and how that had been removed at the behest of the Trump people, and Taibbi, and there was a lot of criticism of him, you know, what he was the guy who was, who wrote that particular part of the Twitter files.
And he was the first guy, he was the guy who was brought out to provide it credibility.
Exactly. He was supposed to be, hey, look, here's one of your lefties here.
It was his credibility on the line.
Well, he said his explanation for all of this was, you know, well, I did write that it happened with the Trump administration, too, which he did. There was one small line in there that said that. And he said, yeah, but sure, LOL, Chrissy Teigen. That was his response as a
really?
Reporter. To, yes,
I missed that.
Yeah, yeah, but and in those whole Twitter files, like the 4 million long thread that was posted, just to the aside mention of Trump, he's had follow up reports where you could dig into. It's not
but just, Twitter files 208 now.
Yeah, right. Like this was not just the Biden campaign saying, "Can you please take the dick pics of my son who has struggled down?" This was the Trump White House at the time. And so if you're actually trying to look into like government colluding with big tech, that might be on your radar, right? Because they were the actual government at that point, not just a political campaign. Biden wasn't in office at that time. Right. So
here's the tweet that you were referencing. And what's amazing about this tweet is that he says, "I reported in Twitter files one that there had been requests from the Trump White House." That sentence is the totality of his reporting of that he had written. There had been requests from the Trump White House in the first report. That's the totality.
The subtext there is, "I covered my ass."
Yeah,
exactly.
Bare minimum.
And then he spends he says, "We showed agencies like the FBI send spreadsheets with thousands of names at a time." Well, that's true. I mean, they were politically motivated across both sides. Adam Schiff's office asked that all searches of his office be blocked, but Adam Schiff was not the only person making these requests.
Yeah.
McCarthy. I mean, like everybody, like they all were doing it. And it's like
well, any of us could have done that. I mean, I could go in and go, you know,
do that every day.
Of course.
Every day they do that. They did it. They do it. And politicians have been doing it with news media. And he knows this.
Yes.
He knows this. If you go on TV, and it doesn't matter what network you are. I mean, you know, Ed Schultz and used to talk about this. Cenk Uygur talked about it on MSNBC. They would say something critical of the administration. Phil Griffin would call him in or whatever it was and say, "You can't do this. You can't do that. We're getting pressure from this guy. We're getting pressure." Happened on CNN, happened on all the networks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, so this is, it's reported sort of like breathlessly as if it's, but it really is sort of stunning the hole they're in. And all right, but let's pivot a little bit to just the State of the Union. We've got a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
We mentioned how, you know, the response to the State of the Union, I think we had this era where Republicans, like at the Tea Party, like Sarah Huckabee Sanders types would come out. They would try and deliver their speech to the American public writ large, mm-hmm. and it would destroy their careers, right? Because remember, like Bobby Jindal, they all come out and they try and do this. And it wasn't just that Marco Rubio was doing, you know, drinking the water and this and that. It was like they're talking to a broader audience, and it's very difficult to talk to both audiences simultaneously. Sarah Huckabee Sanders saved her career, in my estimation, by not even attempting to talk to the entire country. She's talking only to the right wing there. And Biden, you wrote about this. I felt the same way that night. I think Emma did too. That State of the Union address, all my problems I have with Biden, was in some respects astonishing. I mean, he got them to put on record publicly commit to not touching Social Security and Medicare, which they're all the yelling that they did basically just made sure that it was in the news for like 4 or 5 days, which every poll you've ever looked at that talks about who do you trust more in Social Security and Medicare says Democrats. I mean, it was crazy what he did in that speech. And, you know, he ignored a lot of things that he should have talked about. But, I don't take that speech seriously as anything other than like a brief performance, but it that could have actually like material implications on politics going forward.
It absolutely could. And it, you know, as you say, it's a performance. And this was one of the few times, maybe the only time, that I've ever seen a president actually kind of use it as a performance.
Yes.
He understood that that he's there. And I don't know if it's instinctive or if he thought it through, it doesn't really matter. That, you know, they knew that, I'm sure they were aware of the possibility that this freak show was going to act out. I mean, you know, of course they were. They didn't know exactly when or over what issues.
Oh, no.
Oh, she's frozen. Hold on one second.
Digby, if you can hear us, you froze.
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry, Digby, you froze just a second. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Instead of doing, he decided the usual, you know, sort of, you know, nose in the air, kind of, how dare you interrupt me kind of thing. Yeah. He decided to just engage with them and kind of, hey, what are you, okay, you want, you know.
Or he just stared back at them and let them scream, right? She just disappeared. Oh, there we go. When that happened, right, when that Social Security and Medicare line happened, and then you heard Marjorie Taylor Greene yell out, like, liar or whatever, I believe that was the moment, and he just kind of let it marinate. That mm-hmm. was a veteran political move,
absolutely.
Right? And you have you it was kind of thinking on your feet where you know, okay, they're screaming and this is the soundbite. Mm-hmm. Like this is the mm-hmm. one that this is the thing right. that's going to be on the news because of the drama involved, and this is my opportunity to milk it. So he turned a performance into a political kind of bind for the Republicans, where this will be in people's minds when the debt ceiling fight happens in June.
Yes.
Do you think, what are the long-term implications? You know, like supposedly there is no plan that exists by the Republicans to get rid of Social Security or phase it out or this and that or let the legislation expire. Although today it's reported that Mitch McConnell criticized Rick Scott for that very plan that does not exist.
Right.
What do you think we have entered into an era? Because you and I have been talking about this, and you were sounding the alarm bells the day that Barack Obama was sworn into office, that they were looking, the Obama administration was looking to cut Social Security, was looking to do entitlement reform. Mm-hmm. Have we moved into a different era of this? This is the first time, and you know, and to be fair, Donald Trump told them, don't mess with this with the debt ceiling. And it basically was like taking a chicken and lopping its head off. They're still running around, but they have no right. idea where they are. And like there's nothing, they don't know what to ask for. They're going to come after Medicaid, but mm-hmm. that is really facilitated by the states and the Republicans in the states. They've already litigated all that on right. some level, and it's going to be pulled back because of the COVID emergency, which I'm sure we'll talk about in the future. But do you see any long-term like implications to that?
You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, this has been in the Republican Party DNA from the moment these programs were enacted to try and repeal them. I mean, and that's literally true. And it's a Republican thing. It's not one of those things where the Southern Democrats were, you know, on the wrong side or whatever. This has always been a strict partisan issue in which Republicans were trying to find ways to repeal the program in whatever programs in whatever way they could and calling it socialism. Now, right now it does appear, and I don't think it has to do completely with Donald Trump, although it has helped that he said don't touch it. But it's also that, you know, there's an awareness on the part of the Republicans that their base is elderly people, and this is a third rail, and it's especially, you know, electrified for them at the moment. But I have a hard time believing that they're ever really going to quit, because this is sort of fundamental to their worldview. If you're a Republican, there's a part of you that believes that government should not be providing this kind of safety net for the people. If you believe in those things, it's very weird that you would be a Republican. Let's just put it that way, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense. So my feeling is that they're probably going to find their way back to it, but we're in one of those periods where it's probably going to be left alone. There's another reason too. Like, I was listening to the press, you know, even MSNBC yesterday, and they're all starting with their usual thing. Well, they're going to have to do something about it. You know, it's going to go nice. Broke and blah, blah, blah. People, we're going to have to take our medicine. You know, like they're going to, you know, none of those people on any of those programs are going to have to take any medicine, okay, because they're all rich. Yeah. It's the rest of us who are going to have to take the medicine if they mess with these things. So there's always that sort of out
shared
there in
sacrifice.
The background. Yeah, we've got to really, you know, let's not forget we have big problems. So yeah, I'm skeptical that it's going to have a long lasting thing, but you know, any reprieve is good. You just take it and you run with it. And I'm happy to see them fighting amongst themselves. Trump is going to go after DeSantis and everybody else that's running against him on that issue. He's running to their left on economics, running to their right on the culture war. It's a replay of 2016, only he's a little bit even more savvy than he was then. I think he understands the contours of these debates in a more sophisticated way than he did then. And it's going to be something else because it's going to be something else.
Well, Heather Parton, can't wait to have you back on to talk about that as
anytime.
Well. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Treasurer.
Thanks for
Thanks
having
so much.
Me.
Thank
All
you.
Right, Thanks
folks.
For having me.
We're going to take a quick break and bring on another national treasure who's got a big show coming up. Yes, she can say that because she's Judy Gold. We'll be right back. I'm back. Sam Cedar, Emma Bigland. It is the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, we have with us today star of not just the TV and comedy clubs, but now Broadway, off-Broadway. It should be Broadway, but it's probably off-Broadway.
Thank you. It is off-Broadway.
But and also the subject of this song.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
The fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Judy.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding.
Oh yeah, we should say folks.
Not safe for work.
The president of the United States.
There's a little cussing. Gonna go in me a bag.
I fucking, how did this happen?
Okay. Judy Gold, you look great. You look like in show form right now.
Oh, God, Samuel. You look very handsome with your beard. And Emma, always quite attractive. Matt,
wow.
Honest
well,
bone.
Thank you, Judy. Your Sexting. Curls your curls are luscious today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Can we put this up? We are just less than a month away. You're at rehearsals for this.
I had not seen this before. This is amazing.
Wait, how great is that?
So
By the
good.
Way... suspended from Facebook. We were locked out of Facebook because there's a ball gag. But you can fucking lie. You can, you know, spread conspiracy theories. You can disparage people. I mean, what? First of all, that song, which I am so proud of. You'd think it was about someone else, but it was created for Orange Fuckface. But now it applies to so many fucking people.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying like the anger that you were there. Like I mentioned to you that we had some clips of George Santos.
There are no words for how much I hate that lying son of a fucking bitch, piece of shit, no dignity, no integrity. And get out of the LGBT community. We don't want you. Go fuck yourself, okay? I hate that scumbag so much. How is he still there?
There is a provision. Well, let's play some of these clips. We can talk about how to get him. First off, there's basically been a three-part series, I guess, of this that is taking place involving... there's also sort of, it's almost like a love triangle. It's Santos and Mitt Romney and Kristen Sinema. And it's a weird love triangle that exists here between the three of them. And it's a weird dance. It's almost something you would see in nature, like a bird show where like they're in the air and they're, the first is a clip of, we played a clip of Mitt Romney the other day where he talked about his, Santos was a sick puppy, he said.
Yes.
And he had some type of like uncomfortable exchange with him. Well, the guys from Bad Lip Reading,
I guess
apparently they actually are actually pretty good lip readers. And they lip read this and added the thing. And it's really interesting. And it seems to be accurate. But this is, to be clear, this is the Bad Lip Reading guys' voices, but doing what they believe is actually a legit lip reading. This is their exchange.
You ought to be embarrassed.
Yeah, sure.
You ought to be embarrassed.
I'm well.
You ought to be embarrassed.
How are you?
You ought to be embarrassed,
uh-huh,
son.
Sure,
you got
man.
Me?
Well, that's your
ass.
Opinion.
You're an ass.
Yeah, you're very formal. Quite a gentleman, aren't you?
Well, that didn't go so well for those two. It was a little bit of a tussle there.
That's the Mormon way of, you know, you're an ass.
I can't believe he said ass. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, he might have to repent. I don't really know how it works there.
Well, you're not the only one to think that was not appropriate for a Mormon. They caught up with George Santos the next day, and this is what he had to say.
It's not the first time in history that I've been told to shut up and go to the back of the room, especially by people who come from a privileged background. And it's not going to be the last, and I'm never going to shut up and go to the back of the room. And I think it's reprehensible that the senator would say such a thing to me in the demeaning way he said it. It wasn't very Mormon of him.
Ooh. Oh, my God. Oh, because you're a Jew? You can say that? you fucking... he's so... I don't understand, I mean, I love that one female reporter who's always there, like, in his fucking face with the microphone. But I have to say, how did he wake up in the morning and say, it wasn't any yet? You're a fucking liar. You said your family survived the Holocaust. You fucking killed puppies. You wrote bad checks. You're a fraud, you fucking piece of shit. And you're judging other people. Oh, it wasn't very nice. You're not very nice, you fucking asshole.
No, he was relishing that one opportunity he's had to be on his high horse for like the first time
and
since the saga started.
What about how he got there early to get a good seat? What is he, fucking 90 years old going to like a fucking matinee?
I think that you cannot, the only explanation for a guy like this is that there is some type of like, real mental issues
absolutely.
That's driving this. And like, you know, these stories that we hear about men or women who are doing these sort of like they're just driven by this sort of like weird compulsion.
I mean, look at his face right here. Can we put this still up? Yep. He's just like, he looks like the most evil, conniving dude you've ever seen.
He's so disgusting.
That glimmer in his eye.
All right. Okay.
Here he is. But I mean, for him, this is a perfect opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Because he has been trying to associate with the sort of like Matt Gaetz part of the party.
Right, right.
Because that is the last refuge, right? Like you go in there and it's like, we forgive all sins as long as you march in lockstep with us. And get on the MAGA train.
Right.
And Mitt Romney has given him a great target because it is a way for him to maintain some type of victimization and also to choose the best enemy in the Republican Party.
Yes.
And now he's thrown a bomb into what was a budding relationship, it seemed like, in the Senate. One's going to wonder what's going on with this. He was on Newsmax.
Mitt Romney yesterday. Mitt Romney was mobbed because he had a conversation with you. I think we have footage. There are about 15 reporters following him around because he talked to you. Maybe you heard. I was annoyed with Mitt Romney. I think he could have offered you some generosity, maybe some advice.
Oh,
there are a million places to meet on Capitol Hill. He claimed not to hear what you said. You said something back to him. He claimed not to hear it. Number one, is he telling the truth? And number two, what did you say?
I'll put it this way. It's not meant for television what I said back to him. But I can tell you one thing. He did hear me. And Kyrsten Sinema, as she was walking by the senator from Arizona, she said something to the effects of hang in there, buddy, or something like that. I said, thank you. Thank you, Madam Senator. She was very polite, very kind hearted, as I've learned to see her. She's a good person, unlike Mr. Romney, who thinks he's above it all and is in a whole almighty white horse trying to talk to us down on morality. The reality is he's always had prejudice towards minority. He had it in his 2012 election, and that is why he didn't become president when he absolutely had the opportunity to become president. And that's why I was very clear when I said on Twitter, you will never be president because you would never represent all Americans.
I didn't hear that about
now.
What?
Now, what's amazing is you can see Kyrsten Sinema was that woman who walked by and said, and he said, thank you very much to her. So
birds of a feather, baby.
But she's coming in with Romney together, and Romney attacked her right after she had said that. And look at the guy's face. Can we go back to that moment where he starts talking about minorities?
Oh, he's like grinning.
No, Greg Kelly is just sort of like, whoa, you're not supposed to talk about defending minorities. We don't have you on here because you're a minority. We have you on here because you're MAGA.
And you're a liar, which we love. Yeah.
Whoa.
I know, he's like twitching. He's twitching. Look at that. He doesn't even know what the fuck to do. Someone mentioned like a minority. The fact that he's like, well, he's getting mobbed because he was talking to you. That's exactly what that motherfucking liar wants. He loves that. Yes, yep. I'm very important. Meanwhile, his constituents came there the other day, like with protesting in front of his office. Like he has no, what the fuck?
Over what like 70% of his constituents, and it's a purple district in Long Island. It can go either way. They want him out. I mean, it's like 72, 75. Yeah.
Where is like one of the, I mean, Mitt Romney said, you don't belong here, but where's the one person going, come on, people, let's go. This is not good for our brand, whatever our fucking, they don't even, it's so, he needs to be recalled like a fucking romaine lettuce. I hate that motherfucker.
There's no actually recall, but there is. And the last time it happened was, I think it was a guy named Trafficant, if I remember correctly. I feel like he was from Illinois, but he had been convicted of I can't remember what. Maybe it was fraud or something like this. And he got expelled by almost, I think it was like a unanimous vote against Trafficant. So you can get expelled from the Senate. You need, I think it's 2/3. Will you just check on that? I think it's 2/3.
Yeah, Matt, and do so, something.
If it's 2/3, then you got to figure all the Democrats would vote and you'd need about, I don't know, 80 Republicans. I can't do the math, but 80 Republicans to vote against it. And it's just not going to happen because they don't have enough Republicans in their majority to risk it. And
Democratic governor in New York too, right? So if he stepped down, it would be a temporary.
I don't know. We should look into that. But it's so unlikely to happen that.
Remember the first day when he had no friends, where he was sitting there like you know the new kid at school, but everyone already fucking hates your guts. The fact that he has, people are fucking hanging out with him.
I mean, they can't, I bet you there's a
somebody's telling me Trafficant was from Ohio and he was Youngstown, Ohio.
Convicted on 10 felony counts, including taking bribes, filing false tax returns, racketeering, and forcing his congressional staff to perform chores at his farm.
I mean, Santos is on his way with half of those.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Right. How many Republicans are actually not that different from DeSantos, but just have keeping
they
it
don't
a little
get
bit
caught.
Under wraps?
Right. Can you imagine if a comedian killed some puppies, put up some fake charity and took the money and killed puppies? Done. They're done.
Yeah.
And all the just other lies that come out daily. I'm surprised with that Romney thing that when he was he's not a true Mormon, and I would know because I am very high up in the ladder.
Yeah, and you're a Mormon. What's true about you? What is true about him? He is everything I fucking hate. Everything rolled up into a fake gay guy.
So, Judy, that's a great segue into your show.
He's probably not even gay.
Well, I mean, you gotta question just about everything with that guy.
Right.
I mean, it would be, honestly, at this point, it's impossible to know what, any of it, to what extent any of it is true. But is this something that you're going to be talking about on your show? Tell us about your one-woman show. Are you in the theater right now?
Well, no, I'm in the rehearsal space. You know, I'm in the theater, Sam. I do theater. I'm an actor. My book, Yes, I Can Say That, which is about free speech from the perspective of a comedian. I wrote that with my friend Eddie Sarfati. And then, Primary Stages, which is a really great theater company. They had worked with me on something else and said, would you like to do a show? And what would you do? And I said, I'd love to bring this to life because it's so important to me that you cannot silence comedians. And so I asked my friend B.D. Wong if he would direct, and he said yes. And
he's a pretty well-known actor.
Law and Order SVU.
He won
a Tony for M. Tony. Butterfly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, Emma, but you're too young.
I'm so sorry.
It's true.
Yeah. And he said yes, and I always pick directors for my shows who are going to see something I'm not going to see, who are not, annoying, loud Jewish people, you know?
Right.
And so I know him for 30 years because we did All American Girl, the Margaret Cho series.
Oh, that's right.
Together. And we've been friends.
I forgot about that.
We've been friends.
I did the final episode of that.
Yes, I know. I know. The one where we all got fired and then you came in to be the friend.
The grandma was still there. I was her roommate.
Right.
The grandma
the grandma's the only one who stayed.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I forgot that you and BD were on that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Holy cow. Oh, gosh. Yeah. All right.
And so he and I have been friends for all that time, and he's so inappropriate like comedians are, but no one knows that about him. And he totally gets
me. Well, they do now.
Yeah, but he totally gets me. He really knows me, and I was so happy that he said yes, and the process is amazing. It's just bringing a book to life is so hard.
I was going to say, how do you do that?
Well, it started, we have 872 drafts of it, and it's a lot of cutting because I don't want it to be a TED Talk. You want to make it active, and you want to make people you know, go on a journey with you and leave there different than when they came. And I think we finally did it, but it's taken a
Do you have somebody who's like in a book costume who comes out to provide like some type of action quality? They come out like this.
Are you looking for a job?
And they come out and like the pages turn and you. All right.
No, Sam.
All right. I'm just.
Sam, I'm not doing a TED talk. Okay?
It's one idea. One idea I had.
It's not funny.
So what
it's
do you
not
do?
Funny. No. And that's
well,
why
okay.
you.
Okay,
are...
you want it to be funny. All right. Yeah. All right. That's one way
I
of going
want it
about
to
it.
Be funny. Okay. I want it to be provocative. And I want it to be. I want to get my fucking point across that you have to stop. So once you start silencing comedians and silencing satire and truth tellers, that's the end of civilization as we know it. It is destructive to our survival.
Now, okay. Now, let me just question you here on this.
Okay.
Maybe this is, you know, we're going to come see the show and then maybe right. we'll have like a, you know, a more complete conversation.
Postmortem. Yeah.
But what do you mean by silence? Like who's been silenced?
Okay. It happens.
For the jokes.
I'm going to give you
jokes,
some examples.
The jokes I tell.
Okay. There are a lot of comedians who are jailed in other countries, who are murdered by the Taliban, who are, you know, their lives are over because of jokes they have said. Your friend, Donald fucking asshole, piece of shit, orange fuckface Trump, tried to get the DOJ to investigate Saturday Night Live. Okay? They are banning books. They are.
No, I know all that.
Yes.
We also know Nixon got the Smother Brothers canceled on CBS.
Right. And yet they were canceled. But then Johnson or what's his name? Wrote him a letter after they were canceled, you know, saying.
Enjoyed your show.
How about Kathy Griffin?
But wait a second. Yeah.
Griffin. Exactly.
I guess.
Still
okay.
Can't answer her phone. The point is, we tell the truth. We tell the truth, most comedians.
Some comedians.
George Santos as a comedian he would be the worst fucking comedian.
There are some comedians who tell the truth. There's some who don't. I've seen a lot of comedians.
Okay, why are you acting like you're so like, okay, come on. All right, let's be real, Judy. I'm a white entitled male, and I do stand up, and I know.
No,
exactly
I don't do stand up.
Yeah,
I don't.
I know
do stand-up.
You used to do stand up.
Not
anyway.
Not even barely even barely
okay.
even.
But, all right, thank you for finally admitting that because we've all been waiting here.
I've said that many times, but wait,
I'm kidding.
Wait. But like
yes.
who? But who is like, and certainly like, Kathy was you know attacked for her. You know, her thing hanging on the, you know, the Trump.
Here's the thing, Sam. We are heading in that direction. And when I talk to young comedians, very, you know, like young, who are just starting out, you know what it was like. We went to clubs. We were like, said whatever the fuck we wanted.
Well, part of the problem is that
social media.
Is social media and phone cameras. Like, I mean,
I
got to say, I am happy. There were no phone cameras when I was in the clubs and the bits that we did because and not even from a necessarily like a, you know, a political correctness or a woke perspective, but just sort of like, there were things that we did that I would be a little bit embarrassed.
Okay.
This is across society now in terms of like junior high school and this and that. You don't have to be a comedian to have that.
Can you just shut the fuck up for a minute?
Yeah, I'll try for a second. You got a whole one woman show. That's all I got.
Here's the thing. I talked to young comedians and they told me that if they want to work in certain clubs, mostly in Brooklyn, there are certain topics they're not allowed to mention to get stage. If they need to get stage time, they will not get booked if they mention certain topics.
Which ones?
Israel. If one of them even says, I'm Israeli or I went to Israel, like you can't even say I went to Israel.
That was not in the way that I thought it was going to go.
you can't say, Eddie, what else was abortion?
One of the comics had a joke about her interracial relationship.
Oh, yeah. One comic had a whole joke about her interracial relationship. No. She wasn't allowed to do that. Nimesh Patel got his mic cut off at Columbia. Ahmed did a joke in Florida about being Middle Eastern, and someone called 911, and two cops came to the show the night because they felt threatened.
But, I mean, to be fair, he was Middle Eastern.
Sam,
I'm joking. I'm joking.
You were not a successful
I'm joking.
Spender.
I'm joking. Come on. That was funny.
All right.
That was funny.
But I mean, I'm telling you, there are certain clubs that have safe space. You know, you're not allowed to do jokes about this, that. They are being censored.
But it is really, isn't it, though, it's just a question of, like, different club owners have audiences that they, I mean, I remember doing, like, the, you know, the Kowloon on Route 1, and
yeah.
I did a joke about, you know, I think it was about Bertrand Russell or something like that, and the guy in the front row was like, he's a fag. And he said that about me to his buddy, and I never got booked there again because they're like, ugh, your stuff is like, you're talking about books, dude.
Okay, but that's fine. That's just saying you're not right for our audience, right?
Right.
They're not saying you cannot bring up that topic, at our club. These are the things you're not allowed to talk about.
Because we're not even going to give you the opportunity to avoid that.
Right, but that's a business decision. You're not great for our room. And it was before, Sam, you had your own audience. Like now, if you went out and did the Kowloon, it would be filled with Majority Report listeners, and it would be a whole different thing. So, no, that is not equal. You know how many times I got fucking heckled and because I'm a big les? You know, I was out in the mid-90s talking about being a big les in the mainstream clubs. But it's like before the person even gets on stage, they're telling them, you know.
Don't say this.
Yes. And they can't get better. You can't get better. And, you know, we need the audience. It's the only art form where in real time, the audience sees a work in progress and it affects the outcome of that.
Why do you think these club owners do that? Or the bookers?
I don't think all the bookers do it.
Well, to the extent that some do.
I think they're Gen Z, a lot of them. Because now, you know, remember you used to go to an open, you'd go sign up and just wait around and do a set. Now they're produced. Those shows are produced by people. So, you know, we used to be able to just get stage time. Now you have to bring people and all this other shit. But
right.
I think this political correct nonsense has, instead of being, you know, what it's meant for, which is, you know, protecting or just saying something in the right way or in a more thoughtful way, is now just, you can't say it at all. The intent's gone. It's right. Like, you say a joke.
It shouldn't be. I mean, I agree in the sense that, like, there shouldn't be topics that are off limits. You should have the opportunity. Like, you know, like I got fired for a joke that mentioned the word rape in it. And ostensibly, like, that was, it was in response to Roman Polanski.
Attempt to
rehabilitate him. And I made a joke about if my daughter was ever to get raped, I would like it to be a much older man who has a great sense of mise-en-scène. And the idea being that, like I was showing, like, you can't excuse rape by a guy just because he's a good director.
Okay. You are just, what was that? You just proved my point.
Well, I got rehired, and I will say, I got rehired, and it was people could look and assess the joke and say, like, this is pretty clearly, in fact, I had anti-rape activists who were saying, like, this is the 1% or 2% of rape jokes that are okay, because
right.
You're attacking people who are being apologists for rapists. And so right. Your point is, like,
But my, not
topic
everyone
shouldn't be off. You need the opportunity to have people right. develop those jokes.
Right.
Right. I think that's true.
Thank you. And you know, great comedy can cause great discourse, you know? Like my act. People leave there and have the most intense discussions.
Do you anticipate, like, do you think that the people are going to be coming to your show to complain? Like, are people going to go like, oh my God, I was so offended by that. How many people do you think over under on that? How could anybody come to your show and be like, I had no idea?
Right.
I thought this was going to be about ball gags.
Yeah. Well, I do a whole ball gag thing. I act it out because I want it to be active.
Right. No, of course.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what people are going to expect. You know, it's a play. It's a story about what could happen to us and how much comedy means to me, you know, and the direction we're going in. But yes, there are inappropriate things there, but they're, you know.
What theater?
Please, if they get offended, go fuck themselves.
What theater is this at, Judy?
At 59 E59. And if you want to know where that is, that's on 59 East 59th Street. It's a great theater. There's a bunch of theaters in there, and it's great.
When does it start?
So previews begin March 4th. The show opens March 21st. That's opening night. And it runs till April 16th. And you can get tickets now.
Oh, we can get tickets now. Okay.
Yes, it's all on my, you know, my Instagram and Twitter, at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, because I'm a Jew. And yeah, you can get tickets now. Pre-sales are great. And you can read the book. It's not the book, but it's based on the book.
Do you recommend reading the book before or after for people?
I don't. Oh, that's a good question. Eddie, do you recommend them reading the book before or after?
But why is Eddie in charge of all of this?
I don't know. I like his opinion, but then I just shut him down. I don't care what you have to say. he thinks that if reading the book will get you see what the points, the salient points are, but I don't know. I like it both ways. Like, you see the show and you're like, your interest is piqued, and then you read the book, which is much more detailed.
All right. Well, I don't have the kids, it turns out. We're juggling the schedule.
Who said I'm fucking inviting you and your Mormon girlfriend?
You don't have to invite me.
I'm kidding, Sam. You are a very big star. And I have to say that when I go... I do. I go on the road and I do gigs, and people all without fail mention the Majority Report.
Oh,
like, I heard you on the Majority Report. Isn't Sam an asshole? I only listen for when you're on. Like, just stuff like that. But I try to defend you, but they really, you have a lot of listeners.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you trying.
Yeah.
Judy Gold, always a pleasure.
I love
I'm
you.
I'm going to contact you and find out when I should come. Come opening night. I want to go with the red carpet.
Maybe not. Emma,
you can come.
Maybe we shouldn't go at the same time.
Why? Yeah.
Good. Create a riot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The paparazzi are going to be all over you, too.
It's gonna be crazy.
Matt can come, but he's not wearing that fucking outfit. I mean, seriously, Matt, you know
people
you're going to be
Matt.
On camera.
People can't see Matt.
Oh, they don't see you?
No.
Why is Matt catching strays?
I can see you?
Judy Gold.
Off camera, Judy.
Always a pleasure.
I love you.
All right, talk to you soon.
George
I love you,
Santos,
too.
And go fuck yourself, Sarah Fuckabee Fuckface. All right. Have a great
Judy
weekend.
Gold,
bye, Judy.
So long.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls, do some IMs, cover some more clips. Back in just a moment. Oh, you know what? I wanted to let me just do this too, because we had started the show with the clip of what was happening in Ohio, and there's going to be I mean, I would imagine, I would hope that there's going to be some class action lawsuits that take place in that. And this just came on my straight. As you know, I usually go twice a year, started to go since post-COVID, went in October. I was planning to go in April to this Mass Torts Conference that is held in Vegas every year. And people really like the interviews. I love going. It is incredible what some of these attorneys are doing in terms of like corporate malfeasance and a lot of stories that we bring up over the years. And in fact, at one point I interviewed Fred Gray, Rosa Parks attorney, and there's a new Rosa Parks documentary out, but I don't want to lose the sight of what I'm talking about. But one of the guys, the way I got into going to the this Mass Torts Conference, so I had worked with Mike Papantonio, who is one of the biggest plaintiff's attorney in the country, a trial lawyer. And it has been fascinating watching that. Mike does a show called America's Lawyer. It's online now. It was on RT for a while. But it was about these court cases, essentially. And also at different times, like, what the DOJ is or is not doing, what we're seeing in terms of like the right-wing takeover of the court system, both on a federal level, but also a lot of state courts are elected. And over the years, there's been all sorts of like real malfeasance that has gone on there. And why does that happen? That happens because states get, state governments, they'll get paid by corporations or lobbyists to put judges on these courts who are going to be friendly to corporations. Papp was the lead attorney in that C8 DuPont case, or I should say the lead litigator, when it finally came to trial after like 20 years of this saga, and basically put DuPont out of business because they were dumping chemicals into a tributary of the Ohio River. And this just came up, like somebody had sent this to me, and I know there's some other people talking about this a little bit, but, and I haven't paid too much attention to, you know, this think tank, which is called CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. They're a think tank that's been going around. They've been around since the Cold War. And I know Matt, like, you know, has followed some of this a little bit better than I have in terms of like, they're sort of like the supposed misinformation, like think tank, right?
You mean to police misinformation?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, I think very official, like folks that work with CSIS.
Yes.
Very establishment, right?
Well, that's the thing is, like, you know, I haven't paid too much attention to it. Look, misinformation is a problem. I don't like it being so closely associated with government officials and whatnot. But I mean, we do have a problem with that, but there's different mechanisms. But the problem is that it sort of feels like they're running out of stuff to do, or that these apparatus can be twisted. And there's this woman, Suzanne Spaulding, who's one of the people there. And apparently, somebody had sent this to me. She had been in like some forum in 2021, and she's singling out about RT at that time. And RT, there was a lot of garbage on that network, to be honest. But when you think about like the supposed disinformation that's coming out, she singles out Papantonio, and I got a copy of this. And she just retweeted this like a week ago. This is from 2021. She just retweeted this out like a week ago. And she talks about the most predominant. You think about RT. You think about what's the most predominant vehicle of disinformation coming on there. She writes, the most predominant, or she said, is America's Lawyer.
What?
A weekly program on RT. It's hosted by Pensacola trial attorney Mike Papantonio. His weekly theme is that the justice system in the United States is broken, that corporations and corrupt politicians have taken control and have turned the once impartial judiciary into a tool for the elite to use for their own gain.
Yeah, no lies told.
I was going to say, like, wait, what? And so I did a little bit of digging. Now, you don't have to do much, but the Center for Strategic International Studies turns out to be funded by the Smith Richardson Foundation, the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, the Charles Koch Foundation, Bank of America Corporation, Northrop Grumman Corporation, BP, which the words Pensacola and BP may ring a bell because BP was involved in one of the biggest spills, if not the biggest spills, of oil. And his firm was sat on the plaintiffs, essentially, committee that dealt with BP. Citigroup, which got a lot of attention during the Obama years because you had Holder, which I know Papantonio is highly critical of, Eric Holder, for not going after. Johnson & Johnson, one of the biggest cases that they that his firm and other firms, frankly, are doing is about the talcum powder, which we had reported on. I think I interviewed somebody about that years and years ago, that it was carcinogenic. And there are other, Raytheon, et cetera, et cetera. And so I guess my point is, you know, it's one thing to have like a think tank out there talking about disinformation, allowing people to make their assessments. It's another when they start to weaponize this as a way of attacking trial lawyers.
Yep.
And this is the biggest thing. When I entered into doing this, one of the biggest themes out there was like tort reform. And over the years, you watch and what happens. They attack the regulatory apparatus, and then they attack the one sort of like private enterprise that is more or less deputized by our government to hold people to account. And when you hear the words tort reform, when you hear understand what they're doing. They are trying to prevent Americans from getting redress in our court system against corporations. Supreme Court has gone full scale on trying to shut essentially the courtroom doors to people. And the idea that they are now using the context of misinformation that our court system is great, that there are no right-wing judges that are in favor of corporations, that we don't have politicians, particularly on a state level, that are trying to sway courts. The idea that that becomes misinformation is very problematic, to say the least. And so people should just be aware that of this type of stuff, because I understand, like, you know, people are very sensitive to the idea of misinformation being out there. This is just one. You have to be vigilant, and you have to make sure that to the extent that misinformation is being called out by these organizations, that it's not being used to be weaponized on behalf of corporations that want to make sure that they escape accountability for what they're doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well
said. On the one side, you have like the right wing sort of fascist style of lying that you're trying to, like AOC was mentioning, we're trying to clear. There's a project to clear the sort of communication channel so that stuff can be effective, and it'd be a big sort of like. On the other hand, you have the overreaction to that, or the guard dogs against that being empowered, going after Papantonio and stuff.
Well, yes, and going against the whole sort of like tort law establishment, because then they start going out and they're working for these corporations that fund these organizations.
Yeah,
they got to keep the business rolling in. But
and it's just insane to disqualify anybody just based on RT being associated. Like Abby Martin and Pap are two really great people that were with RT, I believe, in the past. There are some cranks on there, but for the most part, a lot of those people are really good. Some of them, at least, really good progressives and fighters for the people. So
and the idea that, you know, criticizing the court system is somehow misinformation. Yeah, I mean, really?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member. Join themajorityreport.com. Don't forget, sunsetlakesevada.com. 30% off with the coupon code SWEET for any of their edibles. So check that out. And don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. You get 10% off that. And new merch.
New merch, shop.majorityreportradio.com. Limited edition. the Emma Geordi Report shirts. I'm better at this than you. Plus, like, also those charcoal and red hoodies are kind of like fire. I want to get my hands on one of those with the, just this traditional logo.
Speaking of fire, what was going on yesterday with the Nets?
Oh, yeah. Big trade. Kevin Durant went to this. I don't know what the fire had to do with it, but
it
was a fire sale, maybe.
Sort of a fire sale.
We did speak about the NBA trade deadline, which wrapped an hour before ESPN went on. Lots that went down there, and a surprise, like, pretty massive trade in the NHL, too. Tarasenko to the Rangers. He's making his debut tonight. I'm just, like, wanting to fast forward my life until that moment. And then we also gave our Super Bowl picks against the spread, although I've officially lost to Bradley, so I'll be eating lots of cheese on camera next week. If you want to see me vomit, youtube.com/ESPN.
Have you determined what kind of cheese?
No, Bradley wants to, like, make it the worst possible kind. Don't give him pointers,
please.
That's
a bad idea to do. As somebody who's done a stunt about eating gross stuff on food and basically, like, bailed on it halfway through because I would have thrown up on camera.
Yeah. Well, he's too nice. Like, I'm kind of banking on that being like, I'll have a little bit and then tap out. He's like a kind-hearted soul. So if I'm really getting sick, I think he'll let it slide, but we'll see.
Matt Leck Media.
Yeah, this weekend, David and I have a conversation with Nando Villa and Rose Reed on their new podcast on the Pegasus Project, the NSO group, and the spyware that was found in the phones of associates of Jamal Khashoggi. And they have a really great series, Nando and Rose are producing and hosting for the Exile Media, I believe is his a new project, and so we talked to them about that. A very scary, sort of like the ultimate validation of paranoia if you're a journalist. Like, don't put anything into your phone that you don't want somebody to get, even like Signal or these special apps, because they can get around it.
Mm. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no! Oh, no! Are you ready?
Oh, yeah! Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
And the alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflakes says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
You see, white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black African. And the alpha males are black. And the Africans are back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck 'em. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday.
My birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on. Black, come on. Black, come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total.
Pussy, 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 pussy.